Some people call it the silver tsunami, a massive tidal wave of people now entering their senior years. For many in my generation, the baby boomers, that means stepping into the unknown, retiring. And I'm one of them. Today is my final show as host of To the Best of Our Knowledge. And for this last show, we thought it would be fitting to talk about retirement, which I confess is something I find more than a little daunting. As I was thinking about this show, I wanted to talk to someone about retirement as a rite of passage. And there is no one wiser about the big transitions in life than Parker Palmer, a writer and teacher and longtime friend of this radio program. Now, Parker's older than I am, but he's not exactly retired himself. He still keeps a busy schedule of writing and speaking, and he's always been extraordinarily generous about sharing his wisdom with others.
I'll be 75 next month, so I'm 10 years past the traditional retirement age in this society.
Well, and I'll be 65 shortly, so
right.
That's the traditional age.
Yeah, and I have, in fact, stepped back from some of the activities that had engaged me very deeply in the previous 30 or 40 years. But I'm still wrestling with the question of how you maybe dial down some things and dial up other things in ways that are appropriate to aging.
Well, I think this is the thing that both intrigues me and scares me at the same time. Turning 65, I can remember people who were 65, and they were much older than I am.
Absolutely. They were old men.
But on the one hand, it seems really appealing to not come to work every day, to read a book solely because I want to read the book and not because I'm going to talk to the author. At the same time, I'm a little frightened that I don't get to talk to the author anymore. That's been a real pleasure. I'm a little frightened of not coming to the office every day because I enjoy the people I work with. I like the work that I do. This is a time of transition that is both a joy and, terror would be too big a word, but a time of uncertainty.
Yes, absolutely. And it has been for me, too. I think for me, Jim, the kind of underlying question and all that is a question of identity. Who am I when I'm not doing all the things by which I have defined myself? Or, if I think about it a little more carefully, by which other people have defined me. And I think one of the most interesting and challenging questions in all of this is, to what extent have I bought into other people's definition of who I am and lost track of my self-definition? And one of the opportunities of retirement and of aging is to sort that question out and come back to your self-identity, which ultimately is the only one that counts.
I think that's brilliant. How?
Well, as I was walking over here this morning through the bitter cold of this Madison winter, I was thinking about a conversation I once had with Bill Moyers. He retired to considerable fanfare, and 8 months later, he was back on public television with a program I love. But I had an opportunity at one point to ask him what happened. Mm-hmm. And he had a very simple answer. He said, "It turns out that I lack retirement skills." And I think that there's an interesting clue there. Of course, I think what brought Bill Moyers back to public television is his passion. And so I think sorting your way out of, into and through retirement has to do both with certain skills and with not losing, or maybe in some cases, rediscovering and reclaiming your passion. For me, that means I need to spend some time in solitude, letting the muddy water settle, because it's very difficult in the middle of an active work life to let the water still enough to know who's in there, who you are, when you're not doing what you're accustomed to doing.
The other part is that it establishes to you who you are. Mm-hmm. I've been well known for 40 years as a public radio host personality.
Right.
And it's difficult for me to think about walking out the door and not being that anymore. Now, what I want is to look for how the new identity can be as satisfying as the old, and the new activity can be as satisfying as the old. I'm looking into your wise eyes and asking for directions here.
Right. Well, the truth is, of course, I don't have a handbook for that, but let me share a few thoughts. First of all, I think it's a birthing process to find out who I am when I'm not giving talks and people are applauding at the end of them. I think there is a grieving process you go through. I think there is pain involved. I think there is a sense of lostness and kind of wandering in the dark for most people. And I think what worries me most is the tendency in our culture to just fill your time with meaningless stuff in a way that anesthetizes that pain. So I think that the willingness to walk into that pain is step number one. You know, it's a special problem for people who have led public lives, as you have and as I have, but I think it's a problem for everyone. It's a problem for a person who's heavily invested in parenting, and suddenly all three kids have left home and are living far away.
I remember the empty nest moment vividly.
Yeah, yeah.
But part of the reason that we all choose to retire, I think, is looking past the weekend and saying, Monday doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Won't it be great?
Yeah.
I can go for a walk
yeah.
on Monday morning at 9 o'clock, and if I don't get back until noon, that'll be just fine.
Yeah.
I don't know how many days you can do that before you say, I'd really like to have someplace to go.
Right, right.
Because one of the things people tell you is establish a routine. Yeah. Make sure that you set up a structure for your life, I guess is what they're saying. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think there's a period, again, during which you're simply lost. And I wouldn't impose a routine on that too quickly. I've had, I'm sure many of us have had, as people who love the outdoors, experiences of being lost in the woods, for example, or lost on a mountain trail. I've made very interesting discoveries at those moments about who I am, about how to handle panic, about what it means really in a semi-crisis situation to stop, to breathe, to regain my bearings. So there are all kinds of things to be discovered in lostness that if you establish a routine too early, it seems to me, you're going to miss. What's that routine about? For me, I have a lifelong routine of writing in the early morning. And if I'm not writing for publication, I can write for myself. I can journal, which I do a good deal of. Mm-hmm. Or I can write letters to good friends.
Actually, writing letters to good friends is a part of this that is of interest to me because I think that one of the restrictions of a job is that you put off seeing relatives, you put off seeing friends. Does retirement, do you think, offer you the opportunity to make new friends, to reestablish old friendships, to build relationships, or are they just going to be as distant as ever?
No, I think you're right. It's a chance to reclaim relationships that may have drifted a little because you're all so busy, and certainly a chance to meet new folks and make new friends. You know, it seems to me that we have to say, okay, for 40 years or whatever it was, this was the way I found to make meaning in my life and to find purpose, and to develop a sense of self-worth. So the question now becomes, how do I assess my self-worth? I want to say that retirement and aging give us a chance to detach that question from functionality. I mean, I think we're all worth a lot more than just what we do. I think that one of the most fundamental claims and insights of any of the great wisdom traditions is that human beings are of worth simply because they are, simply because they are alive, simply because they be. And to use language that other people have used, this is an opportunity, retirement and aging, to shift my focus from doing to being.
This division continues to intrigue me. I think about my father, who was a brilliant man, and who was a man who did much public service. I never thought of him as someone who defined himself by his work. But in his later years, as his friends got older, as his friends died, he began to look a little lonely because the work that he had done so well for so many years wasn't there anymore. There was that kind of diminishment, and that's not something I look forward to.
No, nor do I, nor should we. I wonder if it wasn't true of your father and my father and of men of that generation, that these were things they just didn't talk about. And here you and I are, in our generation, not only talking about them, but talking about them on the radio.
Actively pursuing
yes,
a change.
Absolutely. So I mentioned earlier the importance of solitude to let the water settle. Equally important in my mind when it comes to what I need to be doing during this transition is talking with people I trust at a level of real intimacy and vulnerability. It is a vulnerable thing to say, you know, I'm not sure I know who I am when I'm not given talks and writing books and getting applause and earning royalties. You know, that's a vulnerable thing to say. And it opens the door into a lot of big questions that need to be talked about.
One of the things about being 72 or 65, one of the things about retirement is the recognition that on a good day, you're looking at two-thirds of your life being already accomplished, let's not say behind us, and one-third ahead. You can't talk about retirement without talking about mortality.
Absolutely.
Mortality becomes more real.
You think about your own death in a completely different way in your 60s and then more so in your 70s than you were capable of when you were in your 20s, 30s, or 40s. You know, I think that, again, the wisdom traditions have at least this much in common. They all face into the question of mortality. And in one way or another, they all say the same thing. They say the only way to go well into the big death, the death of your body, the death of your consciousness on this earth, is to enter into the little deaths and practice dying. And I think
I'm watching you smile as you say that, and I think you have to tell me what the little deaths are.
Well, I think that in my life there have been a whole string of little deaths which I didn't recognize until I had this concept or this frame. So when I was 20 years old, I wanted to be a certain thing that it turned out I wasn't capable of being. That's a little death. I had a dream for my life that I wasn't able to fulfill. That's a little death. A relationship that is critical to me breaks up when I'm 30 or 40. That's a little death. I publish a book that flops. That's a little death. On and on it goes, and retirement itself, in the way we've been talking about it, is another opportunity to practice a little death. So the whole question of how we hold these losses, how we grieve these losses, how, if I may say so, we find new life on the other side of these losses, these are the things we're practicing as we go along.
I don't know whether to be elated listening to you talk about this or more frightened than I was before.
W.C. Fields once said, you know, this gives me mixed feelings, despair and disgust.
Well, I'm not with W.C. Fields on that. But I do say I find my thoughts running toward retirement as an opportunity. But it is taunting also to look at that new life and say, why do I want to do something different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is something daunting. And who knows, as you enter those new relationships, who knows what the next call may be? Mm. It may be in a completely different direction. It may take you back to something that was planted in you a long time ago that will now find a new way to express itself that will challenge you as much as the work you've been doing for the past 40 years. Who knows how that DNA might manifest itself in the next decade or two of your life.
Parker, you have been extraordinarily generous in your spirit toward the world, but particularly to the best of our knowledge over as long as I can remember. And I am grateful for your books and for your friendship, and I'm grateful for this positive look at what comes next. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm grateful too, Jim, for you, for the program, for these opportunities, and I just wish you many, many blessings in retirement, and I look forward to being on that list of friends who can be in closer touch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Parker Palmer is a writer, activist, and founder of the Center for Courage and Renewal, and indeed a man I'm pleased to call a friend.